He served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So if you have a question, a comment, or concern about wills, trusts, or that probate process, if you're wondering how do we pay for the high cost of long-term care, now this is whether it's skilled nursing care, you know, that's sort of that traditional nursing home type stuff, whether you're looking for assisted living, adult foster care, at-home care, now's the time to call 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843, and we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. We also deal with real estate and business law. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you know, the stories about people nowadays, I mean, we're starting to hear it's just like the old days, you know, where you put the house on the market and 48 hours later you get three offers, all of them are more than your asking price. It's getting a little bit crazy. I mean, I think who knows if it'll be what they call a dead cat bounce. Ideas. Well, you know what, a dead cat bounce. I don't know how long this thing is going to last or until they start inching up the interest rates, and then maybe it'll all go away. Maybe it's the real deal. But if you're looking to sell a home, this is if you're thinking in the next 6 months you might be selling a home, now's the time to do it. And I guess the same rule goes for those who buy, but you don't need my advice. You're already doing that. Buyers are flooding the market. You know, we've had, 6 years now? 6 years where people weren't building, where things weren't happening, and now that what they used to call pent-up demand seems to be showing up a little bit. So, got a question about how to do that? Give us a call. If you're running a business, wish you were running a business, wish you were not running a business, well, now's the time. give us a ringy dingy. 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. And of course, you can use the same number to sign up for one of our free life plan workshops. These are the ones we do now twice a week. Used to do them every week, the good Lord brings, and now we're doing a couple of them just so that you don't have to wait. You don't want to get people getting discouraged. You know, we did one of these remotely and very recently, and I'm on, you know, we set it up for 11 o'clock in the morning. This is on a Saturday. So driving down there, get the call from the advance party. Well, they lost our reservation. We've got the homecoming. 500 people coming for the homecoming. That's in the ballroom. We've got this person over here, that person over there. Very nice at the hotel, but, you know, on Saturday it's a little bit late to try to figure out what happened. Well, here's the thing. Should our person have called ahead to verify the reservation the day before? Yes, that's in our protocol. You know, check the boxes. This is why we like doing them at home anyway. This is why we like doing them in our own facility, because you don't get preempted by the homecoming. But here's the point of the story. So we've got all these people showing up. You know, as I've told you, we had to get a bigger room, but did not call the day before, and so who knows what the glitch is? Who really cares? You know, it doesn't matter, because the fact of the matter is we've got all these people showing up in about, you know, half an hour. What are we going to do? And the point is not that, you know, we had a protocol. If it had been followed, we wouldn't have had this problem. But the point is, we did have this problem. And it was just wonderful to see the way people responded to it. You know what I mean? It was a matter of, okay, yeah, we got this problem. Set that aside for the moment. What are we going to do about it? And I think that's the most valuable thing you can, which you can hope for, whether, you know, in your own life or whether you're working with other people. You know, the question is not, did we step in it? Yeah, we did. The question is, what do you do about it now? You know, do you start pointing fingers and blaming people? Do you sit on the ground and cry about it? Do you say, well, I guess we don't want to do that anyway? How do you respond? That's really, for me, that's always the touchstone to characters. Not how do you respond when every day is a sunny day. The question is, how do you respond when it isn't? And what have you done to make things possible in case things don't go right? For example, when we go to a facility, we do these remote workshops, we're kind of counting on them for the audiovisual equipment, for the posters and the magic markers and all the rest. That's all true. We do. That's right in the that's right in our requirements. That's in the checklist. But that doesn't mean that we don't bring our own. Do you see? So we always bring, yeah, we're counting on them to supply, but we always bring our own. Why? Just in case. Just in case. And that's what, the reason I bring it up is because that's how we put an estate plan together. You know, this stuff is not, oh, you know, that estate planning, that, you know, that planning stuff, that's something that, that happens somewhere else that doesn't really have any bearing on the way it, no. The problem is that people do view it that way. Do you see? Your will, your trust, your powers of attorney, all those sorts of documents. Very often, the way people look at those is it's something, yeah, you know, I got to do it. I don't really know why I got to do it, but everyone says I got to do it, so I guess I got to do it. But it's not really part of the way I live the rest of my life. And you can tell from what people do with the documents once they receive them. Because once people get their documents, right, what do you do with them? You stick them in the basement, right, or in the wherever, and basically forget about them, okay? It's just a check-the-box exercise. That's the way it's usually done. Let me suggest that it shouldn't be done that way. Let me suggest that the way really to do it, you know, you just got to realize this is all part of the whole. This is all part of your life. It's no different than anything else, you know, when you go on vacation, right? Do you bring the exact number of pairs of socks or do you throw in a couple extra pairs because you don't know? Are you with me on this? So it's this sort of planning should be, for example, at the most recent workshop, where we're talking about how long, on average, it takes for kids to get rid of an inheritance, okay? On average. And the surveys I've seen say if you've got less than $1 million, the kids will be through it in about 9 months, okay? Take about 9 months. If you've got more than $1 million, on average, it takes about twice as long, about 18 months. And gentlemen, oh, you know, you're leading us down the primrose path. That isn't true. And I'm like, well, kids don't always do that. Yeah, that's the point of an average. You know, there are some kids, 2 weeks later, the money will be gone. And other folks, they'll have it the rest of their life, right? So that's why we call it an average. Do you see? It averages out to be about this. It's not. I'm not saying everybody does it this way or nobody does it that way. It's just, you know, in general, that seems to be the way it works out. And what I'm suggesting is that how do you eliminate those folks who got rid of it in less than 9 months? How do you get rid of it? How do you make it more possible for those people to have success? Because that's not a success. You know, you inherit a certain amount of money. If it's gone in 9 months, 9 months later, okay, I would view that as a failure. Because what we're talking about is a lifetime of work to build up to this inheritance, right? That wasn't easy, but you got it. Now, once you have it, you have it. You manage to hang on to it during retirement when most people go broke. And now it's time to pass it over, and it's gone? You know, poof? Wait a second. If there are things that we can do, and there are, to make it more likely that your kids will view this responsibly. You see, if there are things that we can build into the estate plan to make it more likely for them to hold on to the funds, well, why wouldn't we do that? You know, we'll be talking about a few of the techniques that we use, you know, just sort of the way you approach that whole thing as we go forward. But to me, the way it all ties together is I expected, when I'm heading off to this workshop, I expected, because we've been there several times before, that everything would be just perfect. You know, the cookies would be just there, and the sodas are over there, and the coffee, and the sign in the lobby. And instead, none of that happened. It was like, we don't know you, okay? And then the question is, what do you do from there? Well, if we hadn't been ready, if we hadn't prepared in advance for the downside, we wouldn't have been ready for it. And instead of having a very successful workshop, what are you going to do, tell everybody to go home? Do you see? It's just a little bit of foresight, a little bit of planning for just the way you do everything else in your life. It's going to be successful in this area as well. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. you know, here's the thing. This 888-463-2843. If you'd like to get your question, comment, or concern on the air, we'd love to hear from you. Easy to do. You can also drop us an email, David@DavidCarrierLaw.com. That's David@DavidCarrierLaw.com. Or you can go to the website, DavidCarrierLaw.com. You seeing a pattern here, right? Getting obvious. DavidCarrierLaw.com. Go to the website. Lots of good stuff on the website, I think. And also you can sign up for one of our free life plan workshops. That's what I was just talking about. The way that you deal with estate planning, the way that we deal with all these issues, this cluster of issues, and I'm hesitant to call it estate planning because it's not just about your estate, but this whole smorgasbord, estate planning, elder law, whatever you want to call it, the way that you deal with it is not so different, really, from the way that you deal with the rest of your life, although most people do treat it that way. Most people think, well, this is something apart. This is, you know, the way I deal with my life, not really very much to do with the way I do with this estate planning stuff. This, that's the lawyer stuff, and this is something different. And actually, it's the same sort of principles. Like I say, it's how do you make sure that if you're confronted with an unfortunate situation, right? How do you make sure that you can respond to that situation positively and salvage what you can, maybe even make it a better... I mean, that was the upshot of the example I was telling you about. This is a situation where we're doing one of these remote workshops. We did not follow the protocol and did not call the day before just to double check. I mean, we had the signed contract, everything else, yes, but didn't call the day before. And as a result, when the advance team showed up about an hour and a half before the event, and I usually get there about an hour in front, they didn't know who we were, basically. Oh, you know, well, sorry, we got the home got the homecoming over here, and we got the wedding over there, and you know, sorry. And oh, plus, even if we did have the room, we don't have the staff. So sorry. So how did that happen? Well, I guess we'll figure that out in the days to come. But it's really kind of irrelevant because it wound up being a very successful event. We found another venue a couple blocks over, which actually is I think it's going to be a little bit better than the venue that we were using, which is lucky, which is all to the good. But you didn't prepare for that. But the fact of the matter is that we had everything ready to go. You know, we had all our backup. You know, we had more supplies. We had, you know, we could have put it on in the park if we needed to, if we could have found a place to plug in the computer. But you know, not relying so much on the venue other than to be there. And of course that didn't happen. So the question is, how do you lay in? How do you make sure that you've got the tools in the toolbox to respond to the situations that you're confronted with? And unfortunately, as I say, most estate planning isn't really done that way. And there isn't a real, it seems to me, there isn't a real thought process about, well, what are the things we're likely to need to do? Do you see? What are the things that are important to us? How do we make sure that the things that are important to us are going to be able to happen? It's very important to me to be able to meet with the folks who we met with, you know, to have a pleasant workshop, to have everything available. That's very important. And it wasn't going to be, you know, it was not going to be acceptable that just because this thing fell down that we weren't going to be able to do something else. And I wasn't the one who found the... Well, it was one of those things, you know, all of a sudden everybody starts calling, you know, we're trying to find, trying to find different places. You know, can we do it at the bank? Can we do it at the restaurant? Can we do it at the other hotel? Can we do it over here? Can we do it? You know, how about the church next door? You know, we have, and in fact, we wound up with two venues. And then when we all got back together again, you know, 3 minutes later, it was like, okay, I got a place. No, I got a place. Oh, I like your place better. Okay, I'll go cancel this one. So it worked out. It worked out okay. But my point is that you can't just expect things to fall from the, well, you never have you? I mean, you don't expect things to fall from the sky. You expect to put in the overtime. You expect to save your money, the payroll savings plan. You expect to do those things. And what I'm trying to say is that this cluster of issues is no different than everything else you've been dealing with in your life. No different. It's the sort of thing where you have to be serious about it. You know, we have to say, hey, I'm not, you know, I'm not the dandelion floating on the breeze. Jeepers, I wonder which way I'll fall. You know, I wonder where I'll fall. No. You're not like that. That's not it. Come on now. You know, you're the captain of your ship. You know, you're the master and the mistress of your fate. Okay, you're the one who makes things happen. And it's no different when we talk about all this estate planning stuff. Now, the tools are different. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. But it's not fundamentally different. It's the same sort of thing you've been dealing with right along. You know, you need to take charge. You need to be the boss. You need to say, hey, this is my responsibility, and there are things that can happen. There are good things I can do. And this is especially true with the elder law. It's very frustrating when you see situations where, frankly, there's been financial ruin in families. It just didn't have to be that way. But the reason it is because everybody knows that there's nothing you can do about it. So it turns out that nothing is done about it not until it's too late, because it never does happen. Are you with me on that? So that's the idea with this whole estate planning stuff. How do we move ahead? How do we make sure that we can improve the outcomes? Because life is all about better and worse, isn't it? All right? It's not about, well, I'm in heaven today. Well, wait a second. You got to wait till you die before you go there, right? And it's never that terrible. There's always something you can do about it. There's always something you can do. And at the Life Plan Workshop, what we do is, you know, we take this weird area. Oh, you know, that's very different, you know, than anything else in my life. Well, you know, it isn't really. It isn't. You know, there's good things, but I tell you what, the thing is, if you do nothing, you're going to get the same results that you get with in other areas of your life where you did nothing. You know, if you pack the spare tire and you get a flat, hey, no problem. If you say, I'm not going to worry about the flats, and then you get one, oops, now you got a problem. Are you with me on that? And the estate planning stuff, really no different. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, inviting you to one of our free Life Plan Workshops. These are the workshops we do now twice a week. Make you run faster and jump higher. Twice a week at the Life Plan Workshops. Love to see you there. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. This is the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So if you have a question, a comment, or concern about wills, trusts, or probate, if you're looking to place a loved one in long-term care, if you wish you didn't have to place a loved one in long-term care, and you're wondering what some of the alternatives are, especially now that those costs are skyrocketing once again, well, now's the time to give us a shout. 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. And, we'll see what we can do for you. You know, that phone number is the same number you can call anytime you like. If you call during normal business hours, then, and for us, normal business hours, sometimes between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m., give us a call, and we'll sign you up for one of our free Life Plan Workshops. If you would like just to leave a question on the machine, that's no problem. See, here's the way we do it. I don't know about you. I just don't like talking to machines. You know, hit one for this, hit two for that. Here's, you know, and now tell us what your Social Security number is. You know, you can either say it or punch it in. I hate that. I hate going through those phone trees. So what we've done is we have one mailbox at the office. One, Einer, one mailbox. And so the way we do it is, with this line, with this 888 Go David number, you can choose with this one. You can say, okay, I want to talk to a live person, you hit one. I want to leave a message, you hit two. It's up to you. But for everything else, we like dealing with live people anyway, so as opposed to the numbers. But with this number, you actually have your choice. Of course, you still have the choice too if you want to use that electronic mail, get all high tech on us. That's no problem. Just david@davidcarrierlaw.com. That's a place for you to ask us questions or say, hey, how about them life? One of those workshops there? You can do it that way. Or if you don't have email, that's no problem either. All you need is if you have a phone, well, no problem. If you have a computer and email, well, you can email us. And if you don't have a phone or a email, but you do have a computer, then you can go to the website, and right on the website you can sign up. See? You know, it's all about making it easy to do the good things. And that's really what this stuff is all about. So give us a call at 888-463-2843, and we'll see you at a workshop. Or talk to you right now. Could we make it easier? I don't know. What do you think? If you think so, just let me know. We got some of our emails here. Let's see. One of them has to do with probate, a little bit far afield from what we usually deal with. It has to do with guardianship of a minor child. Guardianship, is when the probate court appoints someone to make life decisions for someone else, and not necessarily with the money. It's primarily at where you're going to live, what kind of health care you're going to get, that sort of thing. That's what guardianship is all about. And it could be a guardianship over an adult, could be guardianship over a minor child. That's what this one's about. Guardianship of a minor child. My brother is going to jail. Ooh, maybe 5 years. I think we call that prison. If his daughter's mother and my brother agree, how do we know we're dealing with a new century? Well, it's because we don't talk about husband and wife anymore. We talk about mothers and fathers. Anyway, if his daughter's mother and my brother agree to give me legal guardianship of their child, because mother isn't quote-unquote settled right now, how does that affect their parental rights? Now, here's the thing. Strictly speaking, they cannot quote-unquote agree to give you the guardianship. Guardianship is something that is awarded by the court. Now, what could happen is you could have a hearing. You could go to the probate court. It would be, in all likelihood, an uncontested matter. But before you get guardianship, they're going to do a background check on you. They're going to investigate. There's going to be not a lot of investigation, not a super deep background check, blah, blah, blah. But they will be doing an investigation to find out if you're an appropriate person to be guardian of the child. We don't want to go from the frying pan into the fire. You can understand that. And then there's going to be a hearing, an uncontested hearing, where the guardian ad litem, this would be the person appointed by the probate court, sometimes they call him a visitor, the probate court, to go out and figure out what is going on in the situation. Okay? Now, you're telling us that brother's going to jail. You're telling us that the mother isn't settled. Yeah, but we want somebody else telling us that stuff because we don't know if you're trying to pull the wool over our eyes or something like this. Okay? This is whenever we have a guardianship conservatorship, the court always wants that independent third party, somebody who is not tied to the people who are asking the court to do something, to kind of look into it and just tell us everything's A-okay. If all that goes through, then the judge may very well find that you're an appropriate person to exercise guardianship over the minor child because the parents are, for whatever reason, temporarily unable to do that. In that case, the parent, so let's say the judge appoints you as the guardian. Now you're the guardian of the minor, of your niece or nephew. Okay? Now you're the guardian. What can the parents do about that? How does that affect their parental rights? And the answer is that depending on the terms of the guardianship, but let's say it's a full guardianship, then the parents don't have parental rights at this point. They're suspended. Okay? And if they want to get the rights back, now they have to go back to probate court and they have to say, hey, judge, I want my rights back. Are you with me on this? Now, that's one way of going at it. That's if it's a, strictly speaking, a guardianship. There are other situations where you can get a power of attorney, right, where the parents can say, okay, we are going to give, you know, aunt or uncle the parental rights here. We're going to delegate our parental rights to aunt or uncle. That's not involved in the court, all right? And it's not as powerful as a guardianship, but that's something that that people do from time to time. Okay, they'll do this, they'll do the delegation of parental authority. So now that you, aunt or uncle, can take the kid to the emergency room, you can't enroll them in school in a different school district because they still, quote-unquote, belong to the parent. Okay, so the school district that the parents are in is going to be the school district for the child, right? Unless you get the guardianship, in which case now they can go in your school district, but that's the probate court, right? And what we're talking about is just a delegation through a, basically it's a power of attorney. You can do that. But in the, and in that case, they haven't given up any of their rights. All they have to do is say, I don't feel like it anymore, and now you're going to be out of the picture. Don't really recommend the power of, in a situation like this, all right, if you're serious about it, going for the guardianship, in my opinion, is the only thing that really makes sense. Because I don't know why your brother's going to prison, and I don't know what, you know, the mother is unsettled at this point. I don't know what that means. But the fact of the matter is, if you provide a stable, loving household for the child, for that child, right, you don't want to leave the child to the whim of the, oh, I'm settled now. Yeah, but, you know, living in that, you know, group home with the, you know, that cult, I don't know, you know, that commune that you put, that's not exactly a stable situation. I don't think the child should be in that situation. Oh, yeah, but I do. I'm revoking the delegation of parental authority, giving my kid back, right? And now you yo-yo back, and now the poor kid's got to yo-yo back and forth, okay? Now, lots of times people will do it that way. They'll do it that way because, oh, we don't want to go to probate court. It's cheaper. It's all these things. Yes, it is. But if you're looking at the long-term best interest of the child, then I think it's worth going through that process. Now, if you're leaving somebody with the aunt and uncle for the weekend, that's a different story. But a five-year prison term and mother is unsettled, whatever that means, it's not mom and dad going on vacation and we want the aunt to be able to take you to the emergency room if you fall down. I mean, that, you break your arm or something. That's not what we're talking about here, okay? Now, if that is the situation, mom and dad going on vacation, leave the kids with aunt and uncle, well, here's the delegation of authority. Yeah, we call that the grandparents' protection plan. And that's a good idea to do, okay? But in this sort of situation, the best bet is to do the, you know, bite the bullet, go to the probate court. Let's establish a stable household for that minor child. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, inviting you to one of our free life plan workshops. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Let's get to a few more of our emails. I really like this one. If no will was left, 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. See, one of my duties as host is to let you know how to call and get in. So that's that. Also, go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com, another one of my hostly duties, davidcarrierlaw.com. Sign up for one of our life plan workshops, or that's a place you can, you know, just leave us an email if you want to. Leave us a little message there. There's a little place you can do that if you'd like to get your question on the air. Okay, so let's get to some of those questions. If no will was left, do the assets get distributed evenly, even if children they are from two marriages? Does one child have the right to dispute they are owed more? My sister, I have an older sister. My sister claims that, and she is the oldest in the family. I'm second. My sister claims that because she is oldest, she has more rights on my father's property. He has since passed. You kind of figured that one. Okay, so do the assets get distributed? So let's say there are kids from two marriages, and it's the common parent that died, and it's the common parent whose property we're talking about. Okay. Well, in that case, yeah. I mean, all kids created equal. All right. From that parent. Now, one of the things that frequently, and just ran into a very tragic situation along these lines just recently, yesterday, as a matter of fact, where we had a situation where the let's say the one, and this is why it's, again, this is why it's important to pack the toolbox. Okay, this is why it's important to do a little bit of planning ahead. We had a situation where the parent died, okay, and now all the assets go to the surviving spouse, which is not the parent of the other kids. It's a situation like this. So you got two marriages, you got two sets of kids, and it was the common parent who died first, okay? So what happens to the stuff? And the answer is it goes to the surviving spouse. That's what happens. It goes to the surviving spouse. And frankly, the other kids really have no recourse, typically, unless there's some planning been done. Typically what happens, now, if there is no planning whatsoever, right, and they're kids from two marriages and all that, the kids the spouse gets a certain amount. This is in Michigan now. I think it's $175,000 at this point. And then they split everything over and above that. Okay? So the kids aren't totally out of luck. But the example here, I think, is one where what happened? Dad died, and he was the survivor, and he was the father of all the children. Okay? Well, it doesn't matter that there was one marriage or two marriages or 10 marriages. All of Dad's kids share the same amount. Okay? So that's how that was, if it was the common parent. What if it was the other parent? Okay? What if this is a situation where it was the surviving spouse who died, and you're not the child of the surviving spouse? Well, you get nothing. Okay? You don't have any rights. That wasn't your parent who died. Do you see? Important to do some planning, maybe? Now, does one child have the right to dispute that they are owed more? Well, sure. I mean, that's the whole point of probate, isn't it? To encourage people to bring their claims. Let's hear what you have to say. That's one of the reasons they make it so easy to bring a claim in probate court. You don't need a lawyer to bring a claim. You just write something on a piece of paper, send it in. We've got one of these coming up where it's the jailhouse lawyer who every year or two sends in some more paperwork. Now we've got to have a hearing so the judge can kind of say, I don't know what's going on with this. See you later. Keep administering the estate. I mean, those things happen, okay? So do you have a right to dispute? Yes, you do. And as I say, probate is set up, part of the claims process, set up to make it easy to make a claim that you're owed more. So, yeah, you have the right to do it. Doesn't mean you're going to win. And then this is the one, the older sister rule. My sister claims that because she's the oldest, she has more rights than my father's property. Well, that's ridiculous. I love it, but... certainly older kids can get to feeling that way, but it is not true. There's no age order privilege or age order special entitlement or anything like that. But you gotta love that, the older sister rule. I guess if she asserts it and everyone goes along with it, then yeah, no problem. Here sort of related. Another email, are assets in a family trust protected from a lawsuit for financial damages? Are homes and bank accounts in a family trust protected by law? Give us a call at 888-463-2843 if you have a question you'd like to get answered. What this question kind of points out, in my mind, is the difficulty of labels in this area. So, somebody wrote the email, says, are assets in a family trust protected from a lawsuit for financial damages? Okay, well, here's the thing. You think you're telling me something by calling it a family trust. Actually, I have an idea what you're talking about, but I could be 180 degrees wrong. I mean, I could be completely opposite of what I'm thinking. When you say family trust, what I'm thinking is that mom and dad, or that you, the writer, has done a revocable living trust, sort of the typical avoid probate, save taxes, get it to the kids type trust. And lots of times people call those family trusts. That's the only thing they call family. There's all kinds of stuff that people call family trust. But if it's the typical estate planning type, revocable living trust? The answer is no. There is no asset protection whatsoever. No asset protection at all. Because why? Because you can revoke it. And if you can revoke it, then the judge can tell you to revoke it. And now pass that money over to these, you know, to your creditors and predators. Okay? For the financial damages. There is no asset protection. And here's the worst part about it. Let's say mom and dad have died and they set up this trust. Well, now the trust is irrevocable. And if the trust is set up properly, okay, then those assets are protected for the beneficiaries. Generally, trusts are not set up what I would regard as properly. And instead what they say is, after I die, distribute the stuff. Okay? So now we've got assets in the family trust, okay? Mom and dad have died. Now it's an irrevocable trust. Now you're administering the irrevocable trust. The kid has financial damages. Let's say this is what lawsuit for financial damages. And the question is, are those assets now protected? And the answer is no. They have to, if the trust says distribute the assets to the kid, right? And now the kid has financial damages. Somebody's coming after the kid. Are the assets in the trust protected against that? The answer is no, they're not. No, they're not, because that person can go to court and say, hey, judge, you know, this trust says thou shalt distribute these assets, and the kid's not distributing the assets. I want you to tell him to distribute the assets so I can get them. And you know what's going to happen? They're just going to say, okay. If the trust, like most trusts out there, are of the avoid probate, save taxes, get it to the kid's variety, then the trust is going to say, once you get the assets in, shoot them out. And then they're going to do that, and that's one of the problems we have with sort of this traditional planning, where it's just a matter of get it to the kids. Where if it's done properly, then those assets could have been protected for the kid. So the answer is: are they subject to under no circumstances are they subject to financial damages? It's possible to do it that way, but that's pretty unusual. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.